Welcome to The Bookshelf from Spokane Public Radio. I'm Chris Massini. Today we're presenting a conversation I had with the poet Claudia Rankine. She was the 2021 guest for Gonzaga University's annual Race and Racism Lecture, which was live-streamed on Wednesday, February 10th. I talked with her a few days before the event. Rankine is the author of Citizen, an American Lyric, which explores the relentless personal effects of microaggressions and everyday racism. Citizen was a finalist for the National Book Award and won the National Book Critics Circle Award for poetry. In her follow-up, Just Us, an American Conversation, Rankine set out to have uncomfortable conversations with white people about race and how or whether they perceive their own whiteness. In addition to her writing, Rankine teaches at Yale University, and using funds from her 2016 MacArthur Fellowship, she founded the Racial Imaginary Institute, an interdisciplinary center for writers, artists, and scholars to examine whiteness and race as social constructs. Claudia Rankine, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me.
Oh, thank you for having me, Chris.
So one thing that I really appreciate about your work is how it helps bring into focus the ways in which these big structural systemic racism translates into personal experiences and sort of one-on-one interactions between people. And I wonder if you can just sort of set us up by talking about that decision to use that really close focus in your work.
Well, I think a lot of people talk about systemic racism and institutional racism and, use this language that suggests that the racism is happening over there and not where you stand in a day-to-day way. And institutions are made up of people. If it's systemic, it's systemic because people are allowing things to continue from generation to generation. So I wanted to show that the very people who make up the courts, who make up institutions like Yale, where I teach, and who work in the drugstore and encounter in the hospital, are the people who are holding these beliefs. And then the beliefs play themselves out in both policy decisions and interactions.
Yeah.
And so that was the sort of organizational structure I was trying to replicate by having these conversations.
Yeah. So I want to talk first about Citizen and then talk about the new book. So one of the things that really stuck with me about Citizen was the section about Serena Williams and how you describe watching her, undisputably one of the greatest, most dominant athletes in the history of professional sports still, or maybe especially because she's in such a dominant position, deal with racism and unfair treatment. And I wonder, in one sense, there's the everyday aspect of, normal people's lives. But then there's also these examples of famous, high-achieving Black people still dealing with it. And I wonder what we can learn from those examples.
Well, I wanted to use examples from exceptional people like Serena Williams. I mean, we're not all Serena Williams, but I think the fantasy is that somehow you can get beyond racism. That if you have enough money, if you have, if you're the greatest athlete in the country, maybe the world.
Yeah.
Certainly when you see how many Grand Slams she's managed to win, she's a contender for that. That you don't get there and then arrive beyond racism. You get there in spite of it. You get there by managing the racism along the way. And so it was important to me to sort of take out the myth of the exceptional Negro somebody who has achieved beyond such treatment.
Citizen came out right sort of smack in the middle of Barack Obama's presidency, and sort of the country was grappling with the ultimate example of that, of a black man as president, and both the revolutionary aspect of that and also the pushback against someone, a black man, in that position of power. And then you sort of set up your new book, Just Us, An American Conversation, with this idea that you were starting to put together this class at Yale on whiteness right as Donald Trump was starting to run for president, and then you taught the class under his presidency. I wonder, how do you think our country's experience of race and interactions with people of different races has changed under those two administrations?
Well, one of the reasons I was interested in doing this project then was the rhetoric around post-race. There was so much said that we are beyond it. President Obama's proof of it, and when you looked at the voting blocks, who actually voted for him, it wasn't in the majority white Americans. And if that's the case, then nothing has changed. It just meant that more black and brown people had access to voting. And clearly, that's how the Republicans saw it as well, because in the election that followed, voter suppression became the main objective, to the point of calling the election and the voting process illegal, and all the other lies that were propagated in the last year. So I really wanted to show that even though we had this incredible figure as our president for 8 years, it wasn't a change in the ideology of this country, in the positioning of the country, in the positioning of the Supreme Court, what was going on in the Senate. We saw throughout his 8 years was complete pushback throughout that whole time. So I just felt that people are ready to sort of look the other way, even as our white supremacist orientation is pushing ahead.
Yeah. I'm talking with Claudia Rankine, poet and author of Citizen, an American Lyric, and a new book, Just Us, an American Conversation. So your new book, Just Us, you really dive into that and take that head on by seeking out white people and white men in particular, and having conversations about whiteness and about race, and conversations that are really uncomfortable. So what made you, after 8 years of Obama and then the transition to Trump, what made you decide to take it on in that way, in that sort of personal interaction with white men?
Well, because I really felt that there were all these things that were happening that weren't on the sort of front burner of the news. There was a 50% rise in white supremacist groups in this country. We had a sitting president who refused to acknowledge that domestic terrorism was on the rise. Obviously I have no power. I'm a poet. But I really wanted to say to people, hey, look what's happening. And white men are in positions of power, 30% of the population holding 75% of elected office at the time. And I'm like, you guys have to begin to understand, one, your power, two, what you're doing with it, and three, what is developing in this country in terms of white supremacist groups. And so that was the sort of drive to get this out, to get the book done and to have the conversations recorded so that we could at least begin to live in the same reality, you know, so that I'm not over here knowing that we have a 50% rise in white supremacist groups who eventually will storm the Capitol. And then we have people over there telling me that I'm in a post-race situation.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that's so interesting, and hearing you describe yourself as, you know, a poet, so, you know, what can you do? What power do you have? And I've heard you say in other interviews that it's not your job, or it's not the artist's job to, you know, suggest solutions or make prescriptions on what people should do, only to sort of represent what is there out in the world or reflect that. But I want to push you a little bit on that because, you know, in the poem that opens your new book, Just Us, an American Conversation, you really kind of make it personal. You say, if I can quote you here, "I'm here without the shrug, attempting to understand how what I want and what I want from you run parallel. Justice and the openings for just us." So clearly there is something that you want both from the individual and from the greater society. So I wonder, is just an awareness of that sort of two realities enough, or do we really need to move toward some concrete actions now?
Well, you know, I want what I want, yes. I mean, I don't think I would ever say I don't want something. I don't believe I can make you change your ways or want what I want. Mm. I don't, you know, I would like that. I would like a way for us to be able to say it's snowing outside today and both of us agree because there's snow on the ground, you know, whether you decide that you think it shouldn't be shoveled, you know, I can't do anything about that, but but I would like us both to agree that yes, there is snow on the ground and it's very white and it's covering everything.
That's a good analogy. You're listening to The Bookshelf from Spokane Public Radio. I'm Chris Messini. We're listening to my conversation with Claudia Rankin, author of Citizen, an American Lyric, and Just Us, an American Conversation. She was the featured speaker for Gonzaga University's fourth annual Race and Racism Lecture, February 10th, 2021. In anticipation of her event, I asked Rankin about addressing racism in a community like Spokane, which is 85% white. Why should white people have these difficult conversations, especially when some of us don't often interact with many people of color in our daily lives?
Well, partly because it's not just about coming into contact with people of color, and it's not just about people of color. It is about what whiteness means as well. And, you know, white people are a race in and of themselves. And if you have white supremacists running around in your government, in your state government, in, you know, in your local government, making decisions for you that don't align with science or don't align with what you know of racial politics in this country, then it's, you know, it's an issue for you as well as for me. This is not, you know, we're not talking about simply issues around racial justice. We're talking about issues around equity and justice and across the board that touch all of our lives. You know, one of the terms I dislike is this idea of allyship, because it shouldn't be that white people are allies of black people. They should understand that having justice and equity in their community, in their world, in their democracy is good for them. They should be out there, even if there were no Black people, no Jewish people, no women in this country. If you have one white man as misogynist, as racist, as anti-Semitic, as homophobic, you know, white people should be out there saying, no, this will not end up good for me. This will not be a good thing for the democracy that I want to live in.
Yeah, you know, I think that's such an important point and a really nuanced one that can be difficult to grasp sometimes, that racism doesn't just hurt people in the, or sexism or homophobia, just hurt people in that, you know, so-called marginalized group, but it affects the majority as well. So I want to dig a little bit deeper into that. Talk a little bit more about how you see the effects of racism on white men, particularly in your conversations with them.
Well, you know, I know a lot of white men who feel like they shouldn't be grouped together as white men, but it is true that the category of white men has a certain power in this country, in the same way that the category of Black women has a certain group dynamic. I personally am an individual as Claudia Rankin, but I also understand that I belong to the group of Black women. And not all of us are committed to the same things, but many of us are subject to similar kinds of dynamics. And so I see this also for white men in particular, but for white people in general, that people should not have waited until, you know, white people stormed the Capitol to understand that these were their neighbors. You know, when you look at who stormed the Capitol, many former military people, but also, you know, people who were dermatologists or doctors or furniture makers or, you know, so basically people who were our neighbors. And so we're living with people surrounding us who we should understand would like to destroy the country that we live in the way that we know and love it as a democracy, you know, that it should function in a certain way towards a certain sense of justice for us all. It has failed Black people, but it can get to the point where it fails everyone if you allow this to continue.
Well, I should say, I keep saying your conversations with them, white men, I'm doing exactly the thing that you pointed out, which is separating myself as a white man from those bad white men that you have conversations mm-hmm. with. But that's exactly what you're doing now. So, again, getting back to your event with Gonzaga University, in advance of the event, the university paired with high schools in Spokane to get copies of Citizens, about 450 copies, into the hands of high school students. And I'm sure this is not the first time that your book has been used in classrooms and taught. So what do you think engaging with a piece of literature like Citizen or like your new book, Just Us, can add to a classroom discussion of race and racism?
Well, you know, my hope is that it will broaden the discussion. It will allow for other avenues in. It might not be the book for everyone, but for some people, it will be a way to see something they know but have not seen on the page. And it will allow for discussions. I've heard people say that Citizen has allowed people to see dynamics that they're involved in day to day, but never actually understood the ramifications of them. So those are the kinds of discussions I'm hoping the students will take from reading the book. I mean, you know, I am somebody who has dedicated to pedagogy my entire life, you know, for the first half of it as a student and the second half of it as a professor. So I clearly believe in the power of literature, the power of books to expand, open, create lines of inquiry, allow me as a reader and as a professor to see and discuss and take apart certain dynamics. So it's all of that that I'm hoping will happen in the classrooms that engage citizen.
Yeah, and your books, and particularly Citizen, but also Just Us, really straddle genre. So you've described yourself as a poet, and many people think of you that way, but your books move really fluidly back and forth between verse and prose and also visual imagery and a lot of like scholarly citation and sort of sidebars in your new book. I wonder, do you think of those genre distinctions as helpful or limiting when thinking about a work of literature?
Well, neither really. I mean, I think I happen to work that way. I don't think every book works that way, and they don't have to. They're, you know, very successful in the way that they are structured. I'm interested in sort of skiing across the surfaces of different genres, and I'm using whatever I can when I want to, if that makes sense. You know, because certain moments, the lyric serves me. Other moments, the image serves me. Other moments, storytelling, anecdotal storytelling serves me. Other moments, academic references and historical or sociological facts serve me. And so I just decided I'm not going to make a choice. I'm just going to, I'm going to do what I need when I need it. Not every book I write in the future will do that. But for right now, because I'm interested in bringing the history of race to the actual feeling of it, to the quotidian occurrences of it, it helps me. It helps me to be able to pull from these genres, and I'm lucky enough to have been familiar with the different genres and worked in the different genres that I feel facile enough to move, you know, to move around in them.
Yeah, well, I think the overall effect of that sort of bringing together genres, I was talking with one of the Gonzaga professors, Todd Marshall, about your work, and he described reading your books as sort of like watching a documentary film, in that you get the imagery, you also get, you know, the personal experiences, but the historical background. So I wonder if you think of your work that way, in sort of bringing, to bring this conversation full circle, bringing those big ideas and making them personal in people's lives.
Yes, I think in a way I do. I think that I have been inside institutions where, you know, the sociologists are over there and the philosophers are over there and the poets are over here and the lawyers are over here. And we're all within the confines of the same campus, but the work isn't meeting each other, even though we're all looking at very similar dynamics. And so, you know, from the photographers, like Mark Peterson, whose work is represented in Just Us, you know, to poets like Audre Lorde, who is represented in Just Us, to Cheryl Harris, lawyer, was represented in Just Us, to Roxane Gay, contemporary writer, who's represented in Just Us. You know, all of those people are looking at similar things that I'm looking at, but we're not used to meeting them all in the same room and on the same page. And so I really wanted that to happen.
Well, it sounds like that's sort of the project of the Racial Imaginary Institute that you helped found, which is bringing all those people literally into the same room to have those conversations.
Exactly. We have a group of curators, and we had a event planned for this year that were delayed because of the pandemic, but we will start up as soon as we are able to gather together in public spaces. But the idea was to create public conversations around the issues that are important to this democracy.
You've been listening to The Bookshelf from Spokane Public Radio and my conversation with poet and professor Claudia Rankine, which was recorded in advance of her event with Gonzaga University, their fourth annual Race and Racism Lecture. You can find out more information about upcoming events at gonzaga.edu/events. You can also listen back to this and many other episodes of The Bookshelf at spokanepublicradio.org or by subscribing to the Bookshelf podcast. For SPR, I'm Chris Messini.